press the on button. Oh, okay. I got all kinds of little personal things I'd like to say because I get to come back so soon. I'm going to have to forego all that. I'm so sorry. Oh, well, and you, you know, and where'd he go? Some of them do hide from me. Just, you know, I was so glad I got here early for Sunday school because you had a very strong scriptural message that's very challenging. And one of the things that was pointed out as evidence that you're actually saved is the devil's going to give you trouble trying to do your walk. You know, if you're not saved, probably the devil will leave you alone. He doesn't really worry. He's not too worried about you. You're not a threat. And so for these young men and the young women coming up and young couples and all of that, you know, keep them in prayer and support them and uphold them. And as Galatians 6:1 says, you know, restore them if they're, there you are, you're not really hiding, you're way up there, okay. Restore them, the restoration, and keep everyone strong and bandage one another's wounds and help each other and love. And whew, there's just so much, well, like I said, I had about 50 things that I'll usually look for some jumping off point, you know, for me to start, but there's too many for me to start with. But I appreciate what you shared earlier, brother. So my job, though, is to get you into Hello, Do Guys. They sat down, and I saw they're all in the same pew, and it reminded me of baseball dugout, so I was going to call that a dugout. That's a dugout right there. Well, all right, that didn't go. You're supposed to start with a joke. Okay, so I got an old Walt Disney, you know, comic there about carbon dating. I was asked to come back and do something on radiometric dating. And, of course, the big lesson here that you need to take away is when they go how all sure they are about all this, how old the Earth is, billions of years old, and how, you know, these bones here are, you know, 300,000 years old. And when you take the Usher's chronology, the Earth's only 6,019 years old. Where are they getting all this? And they tell you they're all sure about it, and they got science on their side. Well, no, they don't have science on their side. Pastor Allen was asking me how it went at UCO on Wednesday night. That was a slam dunk for the Lord. Glory to God. The Atheist Club came there, and they were all angry about the whole thing, and now they've invited me to come to their meeting so they can get me alone. They don't realize. They don't get what's going to happen. And that's glory to God, because that was another, you know, God hitting that out of the park thing. But the topic that they asked me, that Paul Blair, another cadre member from Fairview Baptist, asked me to do, was, is Darwinian evolution scientific or not? And of course, the day before Darwin's birthday, so it was fun. But science is actually on our side. The word science means knowledge. And Jesus said the truth will make you free. And so science is good. It's oppositions of science, falsely so called, that we got to watch out for. And these lying illusions to fact, truth, solidness. Science is powerful. It gave us microwaves. So Bible believers are backwards. No, evolution is backwards. And their beliefs are the ones. I'm just going to give you one kind of this. Let's go down this hole as deep as we can go in the short period of time. We just do carbon 14, and I'll show you just how if and buts this whole thing is for them. If you could just see what shifting sand they stand on with every bit of what they're calling science. It's soft. It's philosophy. It's actually a fanatical anti-science religious belief, and a pagan religious belief at that. So if there's anything I want you to come away with, that I pray to God that you come away with, it's that when these people say they're standing on solid ground, they're only doing that to try to make you step off the solid ground that you're on and join them in shifting sand. I'm serious. That's pretty much how bad it is. And I think, where did I do with my little remote thing? Oh, I did. See, this, it's another Mensa moment. God makes me do stupid things in front of audiences just to keep me humble. That's why I'm not a jerk about being a genius, you know. So God is always smacking me down here. Radiometric age of the earth and the Sith plot to forget the power of the truth. That's for you, Matthew. It's Star Wars. Okay. So here's the scientist guy. Oh, the Bible's not true. These rock layers show the earth is millions of years old. Actually, they believe billions. You have to believe me. I'm a scientist. And the theologians in our Bible colleges and seminaries will cave under this authority pressure. I'll just accept the millions and billions of years, and I'll add it to the Bible. So we got, you know, the day-age theory and the gap theory and all of these other things that tend toward theistic evolution and compromise and watering down the power and authority of the Word. The Word really is still authoritative, you know, whether you think it is or not, but why don't we just side with the side that's correct scientifically, fact-wise, and certainly in the eyes of God. You see all this millions of years of this and billions of years of that. They throw this millions and billions around so often that when we say thousands, it does sound backwards. Well, it's counterculture, yes, but it's not stupid. It's not ignorant. They're the ones living in science la-la land, not us. I realize this isn't that super scriptural, spiritual thing here, but the thing that I am trying to get you is with that, don't be confused by those who come at you with vain philosophies or philosophy of science, oppositions of science, falsely so-called. Don't be deceived by these things. These people are guessing, and they're desperate, and they're God haters. One believer at UCO on Wednesday night said to me, these aren't atheists, the atheist club that came. They're hate-theists because they're really haters. And our politically correct world now, the word hater is a bad word, and they were just being haters. Well, bones and stuff don't come with dates attached, so how do they figure it out? Carbon-14 is one of them. This is the biblical. This is the secular timeline. About 14.7 billion years ago, the Big Bang happens. Maybe 13.7, depending on who you talk to. This is today here, and this is times of billions of years ago, BYA. First stars appear after about 3 billion years. Well, not three. But they have the dark age, as they called it, 400,000 years before the first stars form. Then the Earth forms 4.6 billion years ago. The first life forms about 3.5 billion years ago. Velvet worms invent the X and Y chromosome about 500 million years ago, and here we are. The first humans occur right almost indecipherably from the age of the universe to now. We're pretty much a last hour entry in the universe as humans, if you believe the godless atheist or just evolutionary timescales for things that these scientific theories have come out with. Now, the biblical time frame is a lot different. If you go with Usher's chronology, and I can't imagine he'd be very far off. I mean, he studied, he was a scholar, and he went with the Bible, which every time we add to it or fuzzy it up, we always end up looking stupid later. So let's just stick with it. The beginning of creation, 4004 BC, today, then Jesus at, of course, zero, the time between AD and BC. Adam and Eve are day six of the world, and then Solomon builds the temple about 1000 BC. Moses' time, Abraham's time, a little bit after Noah's flood. Noah's flood being a big also divider of the timeline of the history of the world and the universe. And they threw in Enoch there. I'm not sure. Maybe it's because he died so young. Of course, he didn't really die. All the rest of the people lived in their 900s, and God just took him in his 300s. Well, were you there? Is a question students could ask. You know, how do you know it's 25 million years ago? Well, we've got all these scientific ways to do that. Well, they've got all these ways to do it, but they aren't scientific. Marking time with fossils. You can use the fossils to date the rocks if you really know that trilobites all went extinct 250 million years ago, if that's really true. See, they use the evolution story to tell them how old a rock is based on where the fossil they find fits into the story's timeline. So according to their story, any rock with a trilobite in it has got to be 250 million years old because they went extinct in the Permian time. We do find them only in Permian rocks and deeper, but that's because they lived at the bottom of the ocean before they went extinct, so they're going to be at the bottom rocks. Rocks as clocks, using fossils to keep time, using rocks to keep time. I just told you they'll use the fossils to date the rocks. They'll use the rocks to date the fossils. See the problem? Yeah. Is the Earth's age thousands or millions? They should say billions. That's what they really believe. Six literal days or millions of years? Which one is it? I think I'll go scientifically with the Bible and stay on safe ground because it's never been wrong ever before. But that's another message, yeah. How can you believe the Bible? The Bible isn't reliable. Scientists have the answers to show the Bible isn't true. Take the age of the Earth. I go with people I can trust. But they do keep changing it, you know. I like Dr. Henry Morris from Institute for Creation Research. He died, he was about 90, but he was, you know, him and Gish were the granddaddies of the modern creation science movement. And he said, when I was in college, I heard him speak, and someone asked about the age of the Earth, and he said, well, when I was in college, you know, they said it was 3 billion years old. He says, now they're saying it's 4.5 billion years old. He says, but hasn't been that long since I was in college. So they keep changing it. Because they have to, because they find out that their story, if it even possibly could happen, the processes would take way longer than they had at first imagined. So, presto, the Earth just gets older. And you probably heard of these, Jurassic, the Cretaceous, the Devonian, Silurian, Ordovician. And in each of these layers of rock in the surface of the Earth that once were mud, sand, silt, and clay, they will find these characteristic fossils. A lot of it's because they lived at the bottom of the ocean, and so it's natural they'd be at the bottom muds after Noah's flood was over, but that's their story and they're sticking to it. You do have a creationist way of interpreting the rock layers. You have an evolutionist way of interpreting the rock layers, which is right. Well, their assumptions that they make in doing these dating techniques don't make their timeline right. What about radiometric dating? Like carbon-14, uranium, lead, rubidium, strontium, potassium, argon, these are the most famous ones. People think that radioactive elements prove the Earth and fossils are billions and millions of years old, but evolutionists started that belief long before radioactivity was even discovered in 1892 by Henri Becquerel. Carbon-14 dating, which is one we're going to do today because it's the most famous one, you know, popular face recognition carbon-14 has, was only developed and began to be used in the 1940s. So for almost 100 years, they had already had their mind made up with nothing to back it up except that evolution would take millions and millions and millions of years. And that was the only reason they believed the Earth was hundreds of millions of years old. And so it wasn't until almost 100 years later, after they made this up, that they began to find, finally, some kind of dating method that would agree with them and convince the world that they were the smart ones. 1976, American Journal of Science, the rocks do date the fossils, but the fossils date the rocks more accurately. Radiometric dating would not have been feasible if the geologic column had not been erected first. The geologic column is that one with all the blocks of the layers and little fossils drawn next to them to show you what fossils were what age, and therefore, ipso facto, what rocks were what age. Again, this is all standing, and it's proving an assumption with another assumption. It's like saying, and how many ever played Simon Says? You know, Simon Says, you know, stand on one foot. Simon Says, lift the other foot. You can't do that. You're not standing on anything, and this is what they're doing. This is Andrew Knoll, a professor at Harvard in Discover magazine. How many have heard of Discover magazine? Yeah, the Discover Channel and all that. Discover Magazine 2005, 10 years ago, said, a great achievement of the 19th century science, that's the 1800s, Darwin's time, and the Civil War, and the first public high schools in the United States, and all of that. A great achievement of the 1800s was learning to use fossils as time indicators. How could you use the fossils to date the rocks? Only if you knew for sure that the evolution story and its timeline was right. That's the only way you could use the fossils to date the rocks. That allowed the wonderful time scale to come into being. Again, it was an assumption being used to prove an assumption. And that's not good logic, and it's certainly not good science. And it's not a good enough a reason for you to toss out Genesis 1 through 12, because the timeline there says something different than what the world agrees on. You know, most everyone will stick with Genesis 12, because that's Abraham. There's Abraham in there. You got all the Jews and the Muslims and the Catholics and the Protestants. Everyone agrees pretty much when Abraham lived. So a lot of people, they like the Bible timeline as history, as long as you don't, you know, go before Abraham. Let's just start with Abraham. But if you add up, there's not that many generations back to Adam from Abraham. You add them up, and you get 4,000 and something B.C. And what are you going to do with that? Well, that's just figurative. So figurative stops at Genesis 12, right? Why? Because you're intimidated, because it's inconvenient to the world's demands that we conform to the world's way of thinking. You know what? If the world's way of thinking is incorrect, their history is off, their science is bad, their thinking, their logic is all bad, we don't need to even worry about them. Let them fly around in a fog, and let's stand on what's scientifically true. That's what I talked about at UCO on Wednesday night, and that's what got all the evolutionist atheist club all upset, because they just don't know what to do when you actually show them real science instead of legends and clever anecdotes that they say to one another. I wonder what it was like for the Christians in ancient Rome with everybody else going around saying, great is Diana of the Ephesians. You know, they'd just tell these stories over and over again, stories about how Hera unstrung the limbs of Ares and Prometheus, and how the gods got mad at him for giving man fire. These intricate, long stories about the Greek gods and the Roman gods. I mean, it sounded like they had it all down. And I don't want to disillusion anyone, but you read the Lord of the Rings trilogy and you'll think it all really happened. You know, if just because you tell a story beautifully written and in great detail doesn't make it true. And the guy who wrote the story said that the Lord of the Rings story said it wasn't true, but it was actually a Christian allegory, not as crisp as his buddy C.S. Lewis did with Chronicles of Narnia and stuff like that. Well, okay, time scales. I'm just happy to be back here. I'm talking too much. I need to teach more. Okay, sorry. Thank you, Brother Alan. Okay. 1997, a guy at Caltech, in a book called The Science of Evolution, says this: it is obvious that the radiometric dating techniques may not be the absolute dating methods they are claimed to be. Age estimates on a given geological stratum, one layer of the rock, by different radiometric methods are often quite different, sometimes by hundreds of millions of years disagreeing with each other. These stories from these radiometric dating techniques normally don't jive together. They don't connect. They don't confirm one another. Now, usually they'll only use one kind of a test on a rock, because these tests are expensive, and normally every scientist has got his favorite one to use. They take a lot of man hours. And for many rocks, you can't use but one. You know, the potassium-argon method is all you can really use on volcanic ash or old frozen lava. And so they'll just use this one. If you actually get a chance to use more than one on the same rock layer, these methods sometimes disagree. The cool thing in science is whenever they do disagree, they always disagree with the same ratio, the exact same ratio, which is really, that makes little red flags in the scientists' mind go up that something is behind that? Why would they disagree with the same amounts every time they disagree? It would be consistent with the nuclear force factor being different in the past. In other words, how fast these little radioactive things radioactive decay. 1982, this is from Industrial Research and Development, Secular Catastrophism. There has been in recent years the horrible realization that radio decay rates aren't as constant as previously thought, nor are they immune to environmental influences like magnetic fields or heat or pressure. And now we've recently found out that radioactive cesium all over the planet speeds up and slows down depending on whether we're having sunspots. That was just about 2.5 years ago they found that one out, which freaked out all of the people who just worship the mantra of steady decay rates. And this could mean the atomic clocks were reset during some global disaster, and events which brought the Mesozoic to a close may not be 65 million years ago, but rather within the age and memory of man. The end of the Mesozoic was the end of the age of dinosaurs in the evolution story, and that layer of rock probably was laid down during the flood and at the time when dinosaurs became rare, dragons became very rare, and they mostly died off due to all kinds of changes, and very, very few species survived into the Middle Ages, but that's another story too. 1977, in general, the dates in the correct ballpark, when we're using these techniques, are assumed to be correct and are published, but those in disagreement with other data, like the fossils, are seldom published, nor are the discrepancies fully explained. If it doesn't work out the way they want, they just kind of sweep it under the rug and just go and just move on. Just keep it moving. Don't think about it too much. But in science, it demands that you think about it. Science demands that you figure out a reason for something like this happening. But they won't do it because it's working for them. Often when I'm speaking to high school groups or college groups, I'll pick out one of the guys and say, let's say you heard that all the girls, you heard a rumor, there's a rumor about you that the girls on your campus got together and voted you were the handsomest guy on the campus. Would you be going around trying to stop that rumor? No, you wouldn't. So there's not a whole lot of motivation to stop some sort of a half-baked idea, not that whoever I would pick was ugly, but a half-baked idea that you just like it because it's working for you, and that's what this is. That's what carbon-14 and all the radiometric dating methods are. It's an idea that's working for them, but it's really, really hanging on a bunch of threads, and they know that's why they get so angry and why they feel like they have to say it over and over and over and over again. Hitler said, say the big lie, people will believe it. Say it a lot and a lot and a lot. Say it over and over again, people will buy it every time. And you know that worked. He was right. It does work that way in people's minds. These are some examples. 1963, a live mollusk had his shell dated as 2,300 years old. A freshly killed seal in 1971 was dated as having died 1,300 years ago. It must have been carbon-14, yeah. 1984, shells from living snails were carbon dated at 27,000 years old. And this one's great, 1975, from Quaternary Stratigraphic Nomenclature in Unglaciated Central Alaska, an article in the Geological Survey professional paper. One part of a frozen baby mammoth was dated at 40,000 years old, another part 26,000 years old. The wood encased around the carcass was dated at 9,000 to 10,000 years old. And of course, well, that just couldn't be true. Baby mammoths, even when they were alive, didn't live 20,000 years. They had a lifespan probably comparable to modern elephant, or if it was before the flood, maybe 900 years. But there wasn't 20,000 years for that to happen. Okay, let's go ahead and just as an example of a radiometric dating method, let's look at carbon-14 and see what are the unbelievers trusting so much in. You can only use it on something that used to be alive. The other methods are different, but for carbon-14, because life is on the carbon cycle and you have carbon compounds in you, like carbohydrates and lipids, carbs, we do have a lot of carbon in us. Nitrogen 14 is floating around in the atmosphere. 78% of the air you're breathing right now is nitrogen. The rest is oxygen, a little carbon dioxide, and some other things. But there's a lot of nitrogen 14 in our air, and ultraviolet rays from the sun and cosmic rays from space come barreling down. And whatever can make it through the Van Allen radiation belt and can make it down into the ozone layer. The upper layers of our atmosphere are getting bombarded with these radiations all the time, and it turns nitrogen 14, zap, into carbon 14, which is unstable, so it will revert back to nitrogen 14 all on its own. This is how carbon 14 is made in our atmosphere, in our planet. Oh, okay. And it takes 5,720 years for half of it to change back to nitrogen 14. Now, don't think in another 5,720 years the other half will change. Think of it like this. Cut a pie in half and eat half of it. And then after another 5,720 years, cut the what's left in half again. You don't have another half, you have a quarter. And then you eat that. And after 5,720 more years, you cut what's left in half, and now it'll be an eighth, and then a 16th, and then a 32nd, and then a 1 over 64th. And so you never really eat the whole pie. It just gets less and less, half and half and half, till you get down to two atoms. So that's how half-life really works. If this really worked the way they thought it did, and the rates were right and everything, it would still only go out to 110,000 years at the most, even if it worked the right way. And so no evolutionist in the world uses carbon 14, because 110,000 years isn't enough time for them to deal with anything. But this is the one everyone knows about, and it is a radiometric method. So I just wanted to say that too. People who say that they've dated the dinosaurs using carbon 14, an evolutionist saying that would be out of his mind. But we have dated dinosaur bones using carbon 14, and there shouldn't be any carbon 14 left in their bones after 65 million years ago, when they should have gone extinct according to the evolution story. The facts are going against the story all the time. So here's a little thing. Like I said, cosmic radiation from space zaps nitrogen 14 and forms it into carbon 14, and then the carbon 14 gets into the CO2. It'll be in the sea of CO2, which is carbon dioxide, good. And we breathe it in, the plants breathe it in, we eat the plants, the cows eat the plants, we eat the cows, we breathe the air, it gets dissolved in the water, we breathe the water, it's in the rain. You right now have just exactly as much carbon 14 in your body tissues as is in the air. Same concentration. Don't worry, it's not that radioactive, but it's in you. So now, carbon 14 is always decaying away. Now, as it decays away, you keep eating and drinking and breathing, so you replace it. You get fresh carbon 14 to replace the carbon 14 that's turning back into normal nitrogen all the time. But when you die, you know, hint, hint, you stop eating, breathing, and drinking. And so your bones will not get any more carbon 14 delivered to them, neither would your teeth or whatever's left of you, your hair or whatever's left of your body. We can do this with tree bark. We can do it with coal because that comes from trees. We can do it with diamonds because they come from coal. It has to be something that was once alive, like a seashell or a piece of leather or wood or a bone or something. So cosmic rays produce neutrons that collide and turn nitrogen into carbon 14. The carbon 14 gets into all the plants. The moose eats the plants. He dies and rots, and whatever's left of his bones, he stops taking in more carbon 14. So we see how much carbon 14 is left in the bones. And if he's been dead a long time, there's not much left. If he just recently died, his bones will still have a pretty good amount of carbon 14 left in them. That's how the theory goes. And actually, that makes good sense. The only thing they're assuming that really messes up this whole thing for them is they're assuming that carbon 14 always decays at 5,720 years for a half-life. And they're making two other assumptions I'll show you in a minute. which are actually worse than that one. Again, total carbon in a specimen. The carbon-14 is going to change into nitrogen-14 if you let it go long enough. And gradually, there'll be less and less carbon-14 and more carbon-12, which is normal carbon, left. And the carbon-14 will turn into nitrogen-14, and you just won't even know it's there. Carbon-14 are the green ones floating around in the air in the CO2. Plants breathe in CO2. The cow eats the plants. The carbon-14 gets in the cow, and then the cow dies. Don't mean to traumatize anyone. Hope you have some, you know, counselors on hand here. Brother Alan, you can help with people. Have a moment for Betsy. Betsy the cow. But you can see there's the same amount of carbon-14 in Betsy's body tissues, including her horn and hooves and teeth and bones and her flesh, as is in the air. But now, she starts losing it, because gradually the bone will have less and less carbon-14, depending on how long you wait. Now they'll say, look, there's hardly any carbon-14 in this bone. It must be very, very old. How many half-lives would it take to get that bone to have this much less carbon-14 in it than the air does? Well, that assumes that when Betsy died, the air had the same amount of carbon-14 in it as it does today, because we don't know anything about how much carbon-14 was in the air except for today. We're guessing about the past. We're especially guessing about the ancient past, thousands of years ago. And there's a problem with that, too. One is, and I had given four other assumptions of radiometric dating. All radiometric dating techniques assume that somehow you know how much of the original isotope was there, like how much carbon-14 was there to begin with. Two, you also, for something like uranium lead, they'll look at a rock and say, look how much lead's in that rock. Why, it must have been uranium changing into lead for a very long time. How do you know that the rock wasn't chock full of lead to begin with? How do you know that all the lead that's there came from uranium changing into lead? Maybe the rock always had a lot of lead in it. But they have to assume that certain amount of the lead actually came from the uranium. So you have to assume the original amount of the parent isotope, the original amount of the daughter isotope. You have to assume the radiometric decay rate hasn't ever been different than it is today. And you have to assume the sample hasn't been messed with. And I put number four on this list: no sample contamination, no magnetic fields, no magma chambers, no groundwater has leached any of the materials into the bone or out of the bone, neither the daughter materials or the parent materials or whatever. You just have to assume it's been a clean, pristine sample the whole time. These are a lot of assumptions, and they're betting the farm on this. I wouldn't bet on it. Even if I didn't believe the Bible, I'd figure I have to find something a little more solid to get these Christians to start believing my theory, something more solid than this. And yet, without knowing how much they're guessing about, Christians let this carbon-14 thing scare them into loosening their grip on Genesis. And, I mean, you know, if we actually had a reason to be worried about these guys, I would say, let's think this through. Let's go into it. But this is ridiculous. This is not a good enough a reason to drop Genesis. You know, it's not even a worry. It's just that the story on the streets is that we have failed. The Bible failed scientifically. That's the story on the street. That's just a rumor. It's not true. Here's a good one. The atmospheric concentration of carbon dioxide. If there's ever been a different amount of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere, then carbon-14 dating wouldn't work. If there's ever been a different air pressure in the atmosphere, then carbon-14 doesn't work. And there's plenty of evidence that both of those are true. And then carbon-14 reaching equilibrium. Atmospheric scientists today will tell us that it would take 30,000 years, maybe 90,000 years, for carbon-14 to finally reach a certain amount and stay that way forever. But the evolutionists don't think that's a problem, because they believe the Earth's billions of years old, plenty of time for carbon-14 levels to increase and then level off and stay a certain amount forever after that. But what if the Earth is only 6,000 years old? We're way not up to the equilibrium level yet. So when Betsy died, you know, maybe 1,000 years ago, and we look at the carbon-14 in her bones 1,000 years later, there wasn't as much carbon-14 in the air because equilibrium has not been established yet. So it makes all the carbon-14 dates look older than they really are. So because carbon-14 was still on the rise and still is, and when Betsy died, there wasn't much carbon-14 in the air anyway, and we dig up the bone and there's not very much carbon-14 in our bones, it's because there never was. Not because the cow died, you know, 5,000 years ago. It only died 1,000 years ago. If we can find a 1,000-year-old bone, we can measure the carbon-14. So there's all these different assumptions, and it's okay when there's no way to know for sure and check on it scientifically. You've got to make assumptions. What bothers me is they don't admit it in the college classrooms or the textbooks or on the Discover Channel or the History Channel that they are making all these assumptions. Now, we can compensate for these, especially the equilibrium thing. There's a good logarithmic mathematical equation we can use to compensate for the equilibrium problem. If equilibrium is really only 6,000 years out from zero carbon-14 being in the atmosphere, we can actually compensate mathematically and fix the dates. And oh, you get much better dates that go right along with the biblical timeline of things, with the age of the dinosaurs, with the age of the Earth. Again, I'm just trying to show you, these people are guessing. The people who do the actual science work in the labs know this. They have integrity. They'll say, we don't know for sure. But then the guys teaching in the classroom who have nothing to do with doing these tests, they'll say, those guys in the lab, they've nailed it. They've got it. This is just a story. This is just a rumor. Don't be afraid of stories and rumors and vain philosophies. 1998, talking about volcanic ash being dated by potassium argon, and here actually the article was probably about it, the eruption dating game, but they were comparing potassium argon dates to carbon-14 dates. 1998. If you know how much of one unstable isotope was present in a material at the start and how much is present now, you can determine the material's age. The principle is simple, but the devil is in the detail. The final age is not quite exact because of analytical uncertainties and because of small fluctuations with time in the atmospheric ratio of carbon-14 and carbon-12. The ages are reported in radiocarbon years before present, when the present is 1950, when atmospheric testing of hydrogen bombs loaded the atmosphere with artificially produced carbon-14. They need to account for that. Once the nuclear age began, atomic bomb testing and thermonuclear bomb testing sent radiation not from space into our atmosphere, but from the ground into the atmosphere and greatly increased the carbon-14 amount. So the atmosphere has been messed up with this, but a lot of researchers are just assuming that the amount we have today is the same as in 1950 and the same as in the year 2000 BC and everything else. 1973, if a carbon-14 date supports our theories, we put it in the main text of the report. If it does not entirely contradict us, we put it in a footnote. If it's completely out of date, we drop it. You see this? As long as it's good for me, I'll put it in my final report. Every scientist who uses carbon-14 dating or employs it in their reporting, they realize this little iffy stuff going on. And so if it agrees with what we expected, then we go with it. We run with it then. This is a real good one. 2009, Chronis Sadakis of University of Leeds in England in a BBC article said this. He was doing experiments on Neanderthal fossil remains and He was doing carbon dating of campfire wood they found near the Rock of Gibraltar in Spain of Neanderthal campfires. And he was getting different dates than they expected, and so his evolutionist friends were getting mad at him. Dr. Sadakis, this can't possibly... And he goes, well, you guys, you know carbon-14 doesn't... Here it is. Putting archaeological finds, including the evidence from the Gibraltar Neanderthal campfires in their climatic context is problematic because calendar dates and radiocarbon dates do not exactly match up. The radiocarbon chronometer is like a clock that is sometimes running faster and sometimes stops. I wouldn't depend on that for getting you up for school tomorrow morning, in case you do have to go to school tomorrow morning. We're still waiting on that sleety ice stuff. You know, the kids are anyway. My wife's a teacher, so she's, you know. Well, I am too, but she teaches middle school special ed, so she would like a day off more than I would, you know, teaching college kids. So there are differences between radiometric years and calendar years, and that complicates trying to work out what is going on with the climate for a given radiocarbon date. The reference archives, the Greenland ice cores, they were using those to date this sort of stuff, that we have for what climate was doing are in calendar years, and the discrepancies can be up to thousands of years apart. Whenever it suits them to admit that these methods don't work all the time, then they will. But probably all his friends are mad at him for saying that, because now they know that creationists like me can get after that. By the way, I think my wife's students are also praying that it will sleet up the roads enough to at least get a late opening tomorrow. I mentioned diamonds. Carbon-14 has been found in diamonds. These diamonds were dated by the potassium-argon method, and probably it was a layer of volcanic debris above and below the layer that had the coal with these diamonds, and the top layer was probably dated by potassium-argon at 1 billion years old, and the bottom layer at 2 billion. So the diamonds had to have been formed somewhere between 1 billion years ago and 2 billion years ago. Well, we creationists found enough carbon-14 inside the diamonds that the age of the diamonds would have been 58,000 years old. Way not agreeing with the potassium-argon date. And of course, this is uncorrected for with the equilibrium problem and the carbon dioxide concentration and the air pressure problems. But still, this is so way far away from what the other dating method says it should be, it's a problem. Now, this guy, Dr. John Bumgarner from Los Alamos National Laboratories, is a world-renowned scientist. His computer simulation of continental drift is the world's best, still acknowledged as being the best, and he's a creationist. He's a creationary scientist who believes the world is 6,000 years old, just like me. I debated against evolutionists with Dr. Bumgarner at Tennessee Tech University in 2006, got to meet him and stuff like that, which is really fun for me. He's famous and I'm not, but I get to hang around with famous people every once in a while. And he reported this at the American Geophysical Union, and they said, well, Dr. Bumgarner, this is contamination in these dinosaur bones you've been finding carbon-14 in. And he said, well, why don't I use something that's pure then, like a diamond? And he didn't like that. He pulverized the diamonds in a sealed container, heated them up to 800 degrees for 2 weeks, and the carbon-14 would have gassed out and then into the chamber, and they measured it, and he got 58,000 years using their own method, even though it's got problems. But it was so far away from what it was supposed to be, it just shows a contradiction, and they just don't listen when science tells them they're wrong, because they want to believe something else. Romans 1 says they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, so God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. And this is one. Let's see, that's kind of lengthy, but later on in 2007, evolutionists found carbon-14 in diamonds. So now they believed, but they didn't know what to do about it. And they checked and checked and rechecked it. Let's see, okay. There are many different ways to date the Earth besides radioactive substances. There's helium in the air, helium in the ground, coral reefs, the oldest living plants like the bristlecone pine and the Sierra Nevadas. The oldest living thing on Earth is about 6,000 years old. Maybe a little root cutting, survived the flood, took root and spread the bristlecone pines in what is now the Sierra Nevadas. When you hear about something that's older than 6,000 years, like Ken Ham, Bill Nye tried to use against Ken Ham in that debate, I've never heard of this little tree he said was 14,000 years old, and I never seen it in any of the literature either. I think he just made that up. But the bristlecone pine, we've actually, you know, taken a core of the trunk and counted the rings, and it's 6,000 years old. The Methuselah tree is the old one, the oldest one they know of. Okay. Different kinds of calendars. According to different cultures in the world, the Chinese New Year, you know the Chinese, the New Year is important to them. The Jewish New Year, where is that? The vulgar Jewish, you know that the Jews also have the Jewish New Year, and they still go by lunar months instead of solar months, and so they're counting by the moon for the years. 12 moons is a year. Usher's chronology of 4004 BC. And these aren't millions and millions of years. Now, the Chinese admit that when they started their calendar, they went, okay, we don't know how old the Earth is. Let's just add on how much we think old it is, and we'll start counting from there. So all of these ancient calendars that are established, they all realized the Earth had been around for a while when they started their calendar, so they just took a guess as to how long it had already been around and added it in. Now, of course, the Jews, the Masoretic text, they're going to try to go with the biblical timeline for how old the Bible, well, how old the Torah, the Pentateuch says, I think the Pentateuch says that the Earth is. So they might get closer. And it depends on their reckoning and things like this. Some things have changed. We think after the flood that the moon's orbit and perhaps the Earth's rotation may have changed some slightly. It just sounds like God, and John Morsh at Institute for Creation Research said, it just sounds like God that probably a year used to be exactly 360 days, and every month 30 days, and every lunar orbit 30 days. Now it's 29 and a half days. We got some days, you know, February is, you know, 28 days, and some months are 31, and some are 30. We got 365 days a year and all that. And actually, there's a time period in Genesis 6 that talks about how long the waters prevailed upon the earth during Noah's flood, and it calls it from the 17th day of this month to the 17th day of that month, exactly 5 months. Later, it refers to that exact same time period as 150 days. So at the time of Noah's flood, 150 days was exactly 5 months. So that's a biblical clue that perhaps when the flood rocked the earth, literally, that it threw it off kilter a little bit and a lot of things. And so it changed the calendar from a more precise. There are things that would happen that would have slightly messed with the time frame, but not enough to multiply the time frame in centuries or millennia, maybe in weeks and months, something like that, or a small number of years compared to what the evolutionists are trying to say anyway. Some of the oldest things on Earth, what's that there? Stonehenge, okay. And what's that there? The Sphinx and the Great Pyramid of Giza. We still don't know who built those two objects, but there are two of the accepted oldest human structures around. There were no hieroglyphics or markings on the inside or the outside of the Great Pyramid. The other pyramids are just bad imitations of the Great Pyramid that Egypt's in Ramses' time and such had built. But the Sphinx and the Great Pyramid are actually marvels of engineering, far better constructed than the smaller, less precise models that were made later. We did find some flax and fibers of ropes and stuff inside the tunnels of the Great Pyramid, and they were carbon dated, saying that whoever built the Giza pyramids did it in a span of 85 years between the years BC 2589 and 2504. Now, according to the biblical Usher's chronology timeline, the flood was 2,348 BC. Correct for the carbon-14 equilibrium problem, and you get that it's hundreds of years after Noah's flood. Not a lot of hundreds of years, but we're talking Abraham's time or later after the flood. So again, when you actually correct for some of these assumptions or realize they are making assumptions, the Great Pyramid of Giza goes with the biblical timeline just fine. Carbon 14 would be more reliable than any of the others because we know how to correct for it. Also, carbon 14, the atoms do not go through something called a forbidden transformation, which would make carbon 14 less sensitive to any changes in the nuclear force factor. I did get to see that fella who did the preaching on YouTube. I forget what his name is. Washer, Paul Washer. It was awesome, powerful message. How many ever seen on YouTube Lou Giglio? Lou Giglio, the preacher? Yeah, he's a great preacher, but I got a little bone to pick with him on his science because he likes to use the laminin molecule, which is in the shape of a cross. It's microscopic, and it helps to hold cells together in your body. That's fine. I think it's cool that a molecule in the shape of a cross helps hold your cells together, but he's applying it to that verse that says about Jesus, by him all things are held together. Well, that would work for cells in your body, but it wouldn't work for the metal that this tray here is made of. The Bible says all things. So if we go to all things, we get down to what holds atoms together. And what's the center part of an atom called? Nucleus. In the nucleus is a bunch of protons. Protons are not opposite charges like electrons are to the protons. There's a bunch of protons crowded in the nucleus together, and opposites attract, but likes repel. So all those protons should be flying away from each other, but they're not. There are only four known forces in the universe: the strong force, the weak force, electromagnetic force, and gravity, which is the weakest of all the known forces in the universe, is gravity. So they knew this force holding the protons together had to be a force, because we know that there's this likes repelling force that should be throwing them away from each other. So some force must be counteracting it, and whatever it is, it's got to be strong. So we called it the strong force, and now we're okay. And there's a secondary force in the nucleus doing this too, and it was weaker, so we called it the weak force, and now we're okay. I think if Jesus, he's not the laminin molecule, but I think if Jesus and holding all things together, it would be this mysterious strong force and weak force. And all God has to do for the elements of the whole universe to burn with a fervent heat and for the heavens to depart as a scroll, all God has to do is, okay, it's time, and let go of all the atoms, and nuclear fission will happen for every atom in the universe. All he has to do is withdraw his restraining influence, and we think maybe he did that at the time of the fall and radioactivity began, and at the time of the flood, at least temporarily, so that radioactivity would heat up the mantle and all those volcanoes and sliding earth plates probably got kicked into gear for Noah's flood. It took 100 years because God says, look, in 100 years is going to be a flood. I want you to build a boat, okay? So he probably only released it enough for that, a lot of extra radiation. And maybe that's why Noah and his family, their DNA was damaged, and Noah was the last of the great humans to live into his 900s. His kids only lived in their 500s, and after that it was 200s, and Abraham only lived to be 175, and so on. And so on. Well, okay. This gives you an idea. I hope you saw some things about the biblical time frame for the age of the universe and the story of the history of our planet, of life and humans. Also, the evolutionist time frame and the story of the universe and our planet and life on our planet and humans. It's very, very different. How do they justify this? With a bunch of assumptions, with a bunch of if, and, or but stories, a bunch of excuses. I'm sorry, it's not good science at all. Hey, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong and the Earth is billions of years old, but the stuff they're using to say it is doesn't work. It doesn't work like they say. It's based on guesses, and they're not telling you that. So I'm just not going to toss the Bible and its time frame away for something like this. They're going to have to show me something better. As far as I know, there isn't anything good, no science reason that will ever be found to toss the Bible. I teach at Liberty University online, and Sometimes I have students that say, Dr. Jackson, I don't care what new scientific discovery they find, I'm still going to trust the Bible. And I have to rebuke them. Because you know what? We're never going to find any scientific data that contradicts the Bible. Oh, scientific opinion, scientific theory, certain scientists are going to contradict the Bible every day. We're never going to find any scientific data that contradicts the Bible. Science fact, if facts ever contradict the Bible, now I'll have a crisis in my faith. But I've been checking this out for over 40 years and I haven't found any problem. The Bible does not miscalculate pi. I had an atheist throw this up to me Wednesday night. Rabbits do chew their cud. You ever notice little rabbit pellets? Some of them are green and some of them are brown. The rabbits re-eat the green ones. That's chewing your cud. I know that's kind of gross, but at least it proves the atheists are wrong about the Bible being wrong. There aren't two stories of the creation in Genesis 1 and 2. Take 10 minutes and read them both. You'll see there are no contradictions. All these rumors and myths about the Bible getting stuff wrong, contradictions, blah, blah, it's never right. It's always some story somebody heard from someone they thought was smart, and then they repeat it without even knowing where it is in the Bible. So don't be intimidated. Don't be intimidated. Stand firm. They're the ones that are believing in anecdotes and myths and stories, not you. But you read the Bible. You study the Bible. You study science if you're in that field, or pay attention to any scientific discoveries that come up, scientific facts that come up, and learn the difference between a scientific opinion and a scientific fact, and you'll see that the facts come down on our side every single time. The more facts that come in, the more in trouble these guys are, and the more the Holy Scripture is just vindicated again and again and again. When I started all this in the 70s, as I went to the summer scientific, you know, creationism study sessions and all for the summer, and up till now, we've got about 30 times more scientific information that has come to bear on this whole thing of creation and evolution and the time frames, and it's all, every single time, gone our way, not their way. They stumble at what they know not, but your children of the day, you're children of the light, and they don't know what they're doing, and you do. Your mind's been renewed by Christ. Don't be conformed to this world. And you really have the mind of Christ. You can think. We've not been given a spirit of fear, so don't be afraid of these people, but of love and of power and sound mind. Be encouraged, my brothers and sisters. We limp around. We're not perfect, but you know what? The Bible's not wrong, and God's not wrong. And I'd get on the winning side. Anyway, God bless.